Today's show is sponsored by Spot by NetApp, providing a comprehensive suite of CloudOps tools that makes it easy to deliver continuously optimized and reliable infrastructure at the lowest possible cost. Imagine automating your infrastructure to proactively meet the needs of your applications. Imagine leveraging the latest in machine learning and automation to scale your infrastructure using the most efficient mix of instances and pricing models. Imagine running reliable applications, cutting cloud costs significantly, and making life easier for DevOps teams. From cloud cost management to infrastructure automation, Spot ensures you maximize your cloud investment. The end result is simply more cloud at less cost. Discover how the most innovative companies are automating, simplifying, and optimizing their cloud infrastructure with Spot by NetApp by going to spot.io/cloudcast to find more information, request a demo, or start a free trial today. That's spot.io/cloudcast.
Cloudcast Media presents from the Massive Studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We're coming to you live from our massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. And as I record Cloud News of the Week this week, it is the beginning of May, and I apologize. I'm a little stuffy and a little under the weather, so if I sound a little nasally, I apologize for that ahead of time, and I certainly will try not to cough throughout all of this. But let's jump right in to the news. So, as I mentioned, it is the beginning of May. That means it is cloud earnings season. First of all, IBM announced earnings last week, and we didn't cover it, but there is a link in the show notes if you want to go take a look. Their revenue growth was up about 8%. But if we go look at the big ones, AWS, Azure, and GCP this week, let's take each of them in turn. So first of all, AWS. AWS was really interesting because if it wasn't for AWS, Amazon might be hurting financially, quite frankly, because, you know, it's been their thing all along is keep operating a loss, keep growing the business, keep growing. And the stock was hit a little bit because of that. But if I look at just the cloud business, what is really interesting to me is the way AWS has it been able to really turn a great profit in the profit margin there. $6.52 billion operating income, up almost 57%. The margin is up to 35.3% from 29.8% in the fourth quarter, excuse me. So they have really come a long way over the years, and the growth just continues. But, you know, we are reaching this point where the numbers are getting so big. How does the growth continue? So there is questions, as that growth maybe isn't, in the explosive hockey stick like fashion it was in the early years. But that's just kind of economies of scale and laws of big numbers. If I move on to Microsoft, now Microsoft was really interesting as well, because again, Microsoft has all these different divisions. But if I look specifically at the Intelligent Cloud division, which has Azure, it has Office 360 and some of the other things in there as well. So it's really hard to figure out exactly what is Azure or not, because everything kind of gets lumped together. But $19 billion, just a hair over $19 billion, $19.05 billion. And that is up 26%. And revenue jumped 46% as well. So what we're continuing to see is really great revenue, really great margins. And I found this one really interesting. They actually disclosed, well, I shouldn't say they disclosed a number. They said the number of Azure deals worth at least $100 million in the quarter more than doubled. Now, was that from one to two? I don't know. But either way, that's impressive. So kudos to them for that. And if I move on to GCP, a couple interesting things that really popped out for me with GCP. So Google Cloud, 44% year over year to $5.82 billion. And another interesting thing that I saw there was, but they're still operating at a loss. Even with that, it's still a $931 million operating loss. And so this is a little bit of, you know, they're still having growing pains. They're still working on the models and they're still playing catch up as well. And just this month, for example, Google unveiled plans to invest $9.5 billion in data centers. So, you know, they continue to grow, but that growth comes at a cost. And a final kind of stat that I wanted to share with everyone was Google Cloud now accounts for 8.6% of Alphabet's sales. So what we're seeing here is no matter which of the big cloud providers, you're starting to see really significant portions of the overall revenue be generated by their cloud divisions. And I think we're going to see that only continue to grow. So with that, I'm going to wrap up cloud news of the week. Coming up right after the break, we have the folks over at Tackle.io talking about cloud marketplaces.
Today's show is sponsored by CloudZero. For software-driven companies focused on growing margins, CloudZero is the only cloud cost intelligence platform that puts engineering in control by connecting technical decisions to business results. By analyzing cloud services like AWS and Snowflake, CloudZero provides real-time cost insights that help you maximize margins. Engineering teams can answer critical questions like, who are my most expensive customers? How much does this specific feature cost our business? What's the cost impact of re-architecting this application? With cost anomaly alerts via Slack, product-specific data views, and granular engineering context that makes it easy to investigate any cost, CloudZero is your complete cloud cost intelligence platform, connecting the dots between high-level trends and individual line items. Join companies like Drift, Rabbit7, and SeatGeek by visiting cloudzero.com/cloudcast to get started today. That's cloudzero.com/cloudcast.
If you're a software engineer, you've been there. You're finally relaxing after a long day and you get paged. Something's broken. Are the servers down? Is the database slow? Is there a bug in the latest deployment? Now the whole team is panicked, going from tool to tool and person to person to troubleshoot the problem. That won't happen if you get New Relic. New Relic brings together 16 monitoring tools so teams can see across the entire stack from one place. More importantly, with New Relic, you can pinpoint problems down to the line of code to fix problems more quickly. That's why more than 14,000 companies, including DoorDash, GitHub, and Epic Games, use New Relic to debug and improve their software. The next late night call is just waiting to happen. Get New Relic before it does. You can get the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigs of data free forever. No credit card required. Just visit newrelic.com/cloudcast. That's newrelic.com/cloudcast.
And we're back. And, you know, folks, a lot of times, you know, many of us have interacted with the cloud. We've worked with lots of different cloud services. We've bought software if you've been around this industry for a while, but you've also now consumed cloud services. And somewhere in between there, somewhere you've probably been going, you know, there's something I can get from an Amazon or Salesforce or whatever, but what about when I need something else? What about, you know, the things that aren't maybe native to the cloud or, you know, just maybe native to that service, but they make the service better, right? And typically what we're doing is we're going out and we're going, okay, what's in the marketplace? Let's go grab that from the marketplace. Let's add it to my cloud world. And, you know, the more and more Aaron and I were thinking about it, we've never dove into marketplaces. We sort of know they're there. We don't really know what goes on behind the scenes, but they're very additive to what goes on in everybody's cloud experience. And so we thought, let's dive into cloud marketplaces. It's an aspect that we've never really covered. Obviously, they're kind of ubiquitous, but you know what they are, how they work, how we dive into them. We thought that would be a great topic today. And nobody better than to help us understand that than John Yonke, who is CEO of Tackle.io. John, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Hey Brian, thanks for having me.
I want to dive into marketplaces. I want to dive into Tackle. But before we get into it, you've got a pretty rich background. A lot of it, you know, in the data space. I think you and I overlapped a little bit way back in the days when I was at EMC. You were at EMC for a long time. But give folks a little bit of your background, and then ultimately, you know, how you got interested and really kind of engrossed in focusing on marketplace, because you've done that for a while now.
Yeah, sure. It's kind of a funny story. I was reflecting on this recently. I started in IT in the late 90s and somehow found my way into buying things and mostly to solve problems. And I was the junior guy and no one else wanted to do it. And I got a lot of experience purchasing a wide array of things in the late 90s. And then that led me to EMC, where I became an SE kind of early in my career and spent a lot of time at EMC. And I always thought I'd go to the vendor side, spend a few years, and then go back and be a CIO, and ended up always staying on the vendor side and just falling in love with helping a wide variety of companies solve problems with emerging technology. So I was there through most of the 2000s as an SE, and then grew into professional services and customer success and sales leadership. And then in the early 2010s, I was planning to start a AWS migration company, and a mentor of mine was like, hey, we just acquired this big data analytics software company. You should stay and help them scale out. And I ended up doing that and joined Greenplum, which was an acquisition EMC made in 2010. And yep. Greenplum became the foundation of Pivotal. And Pivotal had a pretty interesting journey helping change the way that software was built for enterprises, and a lot of pioneering work around Cloud Foundry and Kubernetes. And through that process, some coworkers of mine and I from Greenplum, actually, they had the original idea around the clouds had changed the way that so much of tech had operated. And this is Dylan Woods and Brian Denker, but it yet to change the way that software was sold. And they thought in 2015, marketplaces could be that initiation point.
Yep.
And that really led to the founding idea of Tackle. And at first I was an investor and then was on the board and pretty active advisor through the product market fit phase. And then, you know, they were like, hey, you've been with us since the beginning. Once we had our initial cohort of customers, why don't you join us and help us scale? So it's been a fun ride ever since 2016 when we got started. 2017, our first customers were like New Relic and Druva, PagerDuty, WANdisco, Auth0, and we've really been off to the races ever since.
Yeah, very, very cool. And we're gonna dive into Tackle. You guys have done very well, taken a number of very visible rounds of funding. But let's kind of start with some of the basics. So, like I mentioned in the intro, you know, lots of people, you know, every November, Amazon announces a whole bunch of services. People know what's out there in the SaaS world, and you know, they're watching what's happening with, you know, all sorts of things going into the cloud. Where do, you know, as you think about the cloud, having, you know, lived in multiple places in it now, like, how do you think about where marketplaces fit into the cloud ecosystem, and maybe even more so, like, how have they evolved from, you know, maybe way back in 16 when you guys were first getting started with this to where they are today?
Yeah, I it's interesting because the marketplaces really emerged, and AWS was pioneering this, you know, even before like 2014, as just a way to give builders access to things they needed to build. So think back in the day, operating systems or open source components, mostly machine image based. And it was just about enabling the builder. Most of that software was purchased and, you know, paid for on an hourly basis. But over time, you know, Amazon came up with a few pretty interesting innovations that started to change things. And that was in like 2015, 2016, where they started to enable SaaS from a business model standpoint. They started to enable annual contracts from a purchasing standpoint. And then they enabled the ability to draw down your enterprise commitment to purchase third-party software. And all of that really started to signal the change that marketplace for Amazon at the time was moving from a builder enablement to more of a, how do we change the software procurement process in the enterprise? And I think really that's what's been happening the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years, and where we've seen a lot of acceleration in the marketplace movement. And I think, you know, going back to that, what do builders need? You know, builders, everything built on the cloud today, whether it's, you know, Azure, GCP, AWS, Red Hat, is a combination of first and third party software. Very few things are built 100% native cloud services.
Right.
And with more and more SaaS products coming out as enabling components for developers and platforms, it actually increases the focus around, you know, procurement. Procurement is a bottleneck to digital transformation. It's a bottleneck in innovation. And marketplace can really enable a solution there and just give people, independent of delivery method, access to the tools they need when they need them as they're building. And as you know, all companies accelerate their cloud transformation. And you know, I'll often talk about the evolution of the budget owner for cloud. You know, 5 years ago, the budget owner for cloud was typically a director of engineering or a director of development or a director of IT. Today, the budget owner for cloud most likely sits either at the head of procurement or the CFO. And as they look at that, they're looking for ways to optimize those, you know, fast growing budget line items and combining, you know, third-party software purchases via marketplace with your core cloud services. You can make bigger commitments to the cloud providers. You can get better deals on things. And overall, you can hedge your cloud consumption bet, because who really knows how much you're going to use 5 years from now. But if you can combine first and third party software together to enable, you know, more efficient use of your cloud dollars, it makes a lot of sense to buyers.
Right, right. Marketplaces are always sort of interesting to me because it's never a one-sided proposition, right? It's, you know, in a typical engagement, let's suppose I'm selling you software, you know, I try and provide a certain amount of value. You're trying to determine, you know, will it provide value to you? But you get into marketplaces and you've got these multi-sided kind of interactions. You've got, you know, you've got the cloud provider. Obviously, they'd like to see people using their cloud. You know, if you're a software vendor, for example, you'd like a lot of people to buy and use your technology. But like, how do you think about where value, you know, comes from, where it's created, especially from a marketplace? Because you kind of sit in the middle of, you know, different people with different, you know, requirements, different goals. You know, how do you think about that? And how do you think about, okay, where, you know, where can we help, like you said, you know, whether it's, you know, easing friction to getting access to technology or, you know, better budget management, but like, how do the different players think about what a marketplace does for them?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're a software company focused company. We sell exclusively to the software companies using marketplaces. So maybe I'll start with the value proposition there. And for all of the software companies who are thinking of taking advantage of marketplace, it's really about tapping into the cloud buyer. You know, every software company thinks about their value proposition with AWS or Azure, GCP, Red Hat, whatever ecosystem they're part of. They're thinking about the value proposition because they want to tap into that pool of buyers. The second value prop for the software company is access to budget and the ability to just ask the simple question around, would it be easier to buy from us on your cloud bill? Really opens things up for companies of all shapes and sizes. So I think access to budget, which also leads to using the cloud contract. If you're in marketplace, in a lot of instances, you can use the contract that's in place between the buyer and the cloud provider in order to accelerate your transaction, which, you know, if you've sold to enterprises, getting a contract in place with a large Fortune 500 company can take 6 months to a year. It's a non-trivial effort. Right. And being able to draft the cloud contract is a huge benefit for the software company.
Right.
And then we've seen a lot of companies be able to just use the motion of marketplace to do deals like first deals faster because they're eliminating friction with budget and contract, or do renewal deals bigger where people are like, hey, you're already committed to us. We're going to do a renewal. If we turn this into a multi-year contract and ride along with, you know, your Azure budget, does that make things easier? And people are like, yeah, actually, if we can, you know, align the software spend with the cloud budget, that makes things a lot easier. So, and then the last thing, which, and I intentionally put this last, that all sellers are targeting is how to do co-sell with the cloud providers. This is like the holy grail of marketplace. If you can find a way to have your value proposition be understood by all of the cloud sellers that are out there working with all kinds of buyers, that can be a supercharger for business models, but it takes a little work to get there. So that's the bigger picture from a software company seller standpoint around the value prop. From a buyer standpoint, I think it's about ease, you know, getting what you need when you need it. That's the number one value prop for me. The second is the consolidation of vendors or being able to put more and more things onto a single bill, which has a downstream benefit of just, you know, being able to hedge those larger and larger commitments. The more buyers we talk to, the more cloud is becoming you know, a top five spend inside their company. And they're really looking for optimization of those top spends, as well as the ability to streamline the contracts with, you know, a lot of maybe smaller companies they do business with that aren't at the same level as the cloud providers or some of the other enterprise software players.
Yeah.
And then, and the last piece of the puzzle is the marketplace provider. The value to marketplaces, it really is all about driving consumption. And the more workloads, you know, even first and third party products put together, a lot of times the third party products are built on the cloud or some part of them are built on the cloud. And if that makes it easier for the ultimate cloud consumer to do more with core cloud services, that's a huge benefit to the cloud provider. And, you know, all of them have gotten smart in allowing people to use their bigger enterprise commitments in order to facilitate third-party software spend, as well as even compensating their field for third-party software purchases, which I think just goes to show how valuable all of the cloud sync marketplaces are from a long-term standpoint.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think, you know, having seen sort of the inside and the outside of how certain software organizations work, I think that's probably their biggest maybe blind spot, if you will, in that, you know, they're very used to a model in which they sell directly to customers or they sell through a channel. A lot of times, you know, companies will view the cloud provider as being, you know, more competitive than sort of cooperative, if you will, or partnering. And, you know, they don't quite understand this idea that buying in IT these days has become pretty fragmented, right? You still have some centralized buyers and you have some, you know, centralized budget and stuff that rolls up to the CIO. But the amount of success that's happened in cloud by lines of business and application teams and stuff that they have to do with third parties and, you know, groups that just buy SaaS, like they don't quite grasp this idea that, like, you know, you have to be in all the places that your customers potentially want to buy. And I think the biggest thing that you highlighted is, you know, they would love to just go, oh, there's a tab. And it's essentially like walking up to the bar and be like, well, there's a tab running already.
Yeah,
cool. I can just jump onto that. Yeah. You know, and they still, you know, they still have to have some consciousness of what they're doing and everything. But that piece alone and being like, oh, it bills through there and I don't have to ask anybody for permission and we don't have to go through a new billing code or whatever the gyrations are. I mean, that's so groundbreaking, you know, it sort of shakes the foundation of how it works. Yeah. If you don't understand that concept, you're probably going to be struggling quite a bit, or you're going to keep viewing the cloud as this infinitely competitive thing, as opposed to, you know, your customers are more than happy to use your technology, but if you make them, you know, climb a 10-foot wall to get to it, it's very easy for them to go, nah, there's other stuff that'll work just as well.
Yeah, totally. We always say sellers want to sell where buyers want to buy, and buyers want to buy where the majority of their things are operating today and where they get leverage. And I do think the competitive dynamics with the cloud, you know, 5 years ago, you saw this, especially in open source and some really public versions of it where directly competitive new services came out. But I think as a builder of a SaaS company today, you have to start with what is your unique value proposition, knowing that someone's going to take foundational components and try to make it easy. So if you don't have a value proposition that's additive to that, then, you know, that there's a challenge there. And we've seen more of our customers who have, you know, a product that looks similar to a first party product, see success in original early first party cloud service users evolve into either the more enterprise grade product provided by the third party, or even want a multi-cloud alternative. It's, you know, they're especially in the enterprise, it's not one answer in most places where everyone runs everything in one place. A lot of times it's departmental. A lot of time it's business unit led. So flexibility of products to be able to run across infrastructure providers is continuing to grow. So I think the competition is something you want to be aware of and thoughtful about, but you should have a unique enough value proposition as a company to be able to communicate through that.
Right. Right. Yeah. No, I think that's the key. Can you walk us through? So let's suppose I'm a new software company. Like, Walk us through the process of saying, like, you know, how do I engage with the marketplaces? How would we engage with Tackle? Like, what's the, you know, how much, you know, what do I have to provide you? Is it just AMIs? You know, where do I, what do I see about my customer still, or do I lose that? Like, kind of walk me through the, you know, how the sausage is made for, oh, there's my software on the marketplace. Like, what happened to get there?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, first and foremost, you have to be a partner with your chosen cloud provider. Yep. And I mean, that's kind of table stakes. And sure. Then marketplace becomes secondary after you establish a partnership with the cloud provider. And you know what Tackle does, we have a no code SaaS platform that eliminates the need for a software company to have to build software to sell software through the marketplaces. And we do focus on the SaaS business model today. We think everything is evolving towards SaaS, and that's happening faster and faster in the industry. So we focus on that, which is the most complex business model for a software company to try to build for in marketplace. And we make that really, really simple across the four big cloud marketplaces, AWS, Azure, GCP, and Red Hat. Okay. And most of the time, you know, kind of what we see is a seller will become a partner and then try to figure out, okay, what do I want to put into the cloud? How am I selling today? How can I best take advantage of the marketplace to accelerate the way that I'm selling today and initiate the journey? And that's really the point we try to engage with software companies around. It's the high level strategy and aligning the way you sell today with the available business models in marketplace, and then crafting a listing that will just make sense to your salespeople. Because, you know, getting listed is not the destination in the marketplaces. These are not things where it's not an easy button for revenue. You don't list in marketplace and people magically start buying your product. You still need to thoughtfully integrate marketplace into your go-to-market system. Yep. And we ensure through our customer success and onboarding process that what you're planning to list is set up to be sold the right way over time.
Okay.
And you know, the machine image, and there's a lot of different nuances in marketplace. There's a lot of different listing types, and there's a lot of ways to present your software. We try to just demystify that and get people really focused. And a lot of time, you know, I'll describe it to new revenue executives who are embarking on the marketplace journey. It's like, you want to build your muscle for marketplace, because a lot of times people will call us and say, hey, I want my software everywhere. I want all of my products everywhere they can be, because I want buyers to have choice. And I'm like, that is a great long-term strategy, but you actually want to start with one thing in one place where you have the highest, you know, most distinct value proposition to go build the muscle of marketplace, which means starting to sell through these marketplaces. And then you can grow and evolve your strategy with success. It's so much better to grow out your marketplace business with the tailwind of revenue driving you to evolve your strategy versus, you know, doing a huge, if you build it, they will come, to put lots of products in lots of places and then have no one actually initiate buying them.
Right, right. Yeah, the sort of classic peanut butter approach of just spread it everywhere and hopefully it'll be good. I want to clarify one thing, so just so I understand. So you said you focus on SaaS businesses. Is that you delivering it as SaaS, or are you going to companies that are SaaS that want to be in say the Amazon marketplace? And I guess the reason I ask that is, you know, like, help me, if that's the case, like, help me differentiate it, you know, versus, you know, like somebody like MongoDB, who's like, hey, we're in those clouds. Like, our service actually runs on those clouds.
Yeah.
Would they end up, just as an example, they don't necessarily have to be somebody you work with, but like, would they end up in the marketplace, or would it be more likely that somebody goes, no, I'll just go directly to the SaaS, or is that not the kind of interaction that you'd see?
Yeah. So, and SaaS, it's funny, SaaS and marketplace is a bit more nuanced than just, you know, kind of traditional software as a service. Okay. And Mongo is a good example because they have a variety of ways that you can deploy, purchase and deploy their products. But the SaaS business model actually gives you kind of the richest experience from a seller and a buyer perspective inside a marketplace. And we see more and more sellers looking to leverage the SaaS business model. And especially as they evolve their own products towards, you know, SaaS as well. So, and an example, an easy example might be Auth0, who's a customer of ours. So Auth0, you know, SaaS product, you could go to their website, you could sign up for a free trial, you could buy it there. But they had a lot of customers saying, hey, I'm built on AWS and I want to use Marketplace to purchase Auth0. And they're like, well, we're not available. You can just sign up via our website. And over time, that turned into some larger customers and larger opportunities who wanted to purchase Auth0 through Marketplace. And, you know, they had one specific opportunity where, you know, they went to the head of product and they're like, hey, can we do the work to get listed in AWS Marketplace? And like all product people, engineering backlogs are full. And typically there's 10 times more things to do than you can ever accomplish. And they're like, well, this is interesting, but we probably can't get to it for a year. And they're like, well, this deal's not going to be there in a year. So that was where they partnered with us. They were able to use our platform. We were able to guide them through getting listed. And then they were able to execute on a sale very rapidly after that. Gotcha. So it's not to say that's the only way to sell through Marketplace. You can still sell using machine images and containers, but they end up having slightly different experiences. You get slightly different data from the clouds about who's using your product, how you use your product. There are different pricing models supported by listing type. And this is where we tend to try to eliminate all of the complexity and be like, how do you sell today? How is your product built today? What is your desired outcome? And then how can we work together to align your marketplace, the way you start your marketplace business, to the way that most makes sense to how you're going to sell?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a ton of sense in terms of kind of going back to that original question I had about, you know, where is value created in the marketplace? That makes a ton of sense for, like you said, just helping people navigate, you know, this sort of complex process, but even more so, you know, again, going back to that thing of more and more people want to buy off of these, you know, sort of enterprise contracts, you know, within the different cloud providers. And you want to be able to be part of that, even if it's at the most basic level. So no, it makes
sense. And there's a few different phases of the evolution. You have the listing phase, which is like launching that initial presence in marketplace. And then once you start transacting, that creates different problems because a marketplace transaction looks different than a direct transaction. And your sales operations team, your finance team, your legal team, your customer success team, your sales team all need to understand that. And as people grow with us, we have different enabling components for different phases of the journey. When you get to that, like, I'm actually selling phase and I need to align, you know, those different organizations with marketplace, we have tools to make that really easy. And then you get to this phase where you're doing hundreds of transactions, potentially a quarter, and you really want everything automated. And that creates a whole nother level of complexity that we have kind of APIs and developer tools to be able to make that like highly automated experience happen as well. But we encourage people, don't start with automate everything. Start with list, sell, repeat selling, build the motion for co-sell, and then grow into automation over time.
Okay. Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. You know, real quick before we sort of wrap up, because obviously you're a busy man, you got a company to run. What are the best ways for folks to, you know, you gave us a little bit of like, you know where you are in the process, maturity of what you do, but like, what's typically the best way for folks to engage with your team or sort of learn more about how they might engage around marketplaces?
Yeah, I mean, we publish a ton of content. We really, you know, marketplaces are new and a lot of people are on this journey to understand how they fit. So we try to publish a lot of stories about successful sellers and just demystifying the ways the marketplace work via content. And all of that's found on tackle.io. So that's probably the easiest front door to understanding the marketplace movement and how you could potentially take advantage of it. And I'd say, you know, if you're new to thinking about marketplace, you can just start to experiment on your own by starting to ask the simple question of, would it be easier to buy from me on your cloud bill? Like, I like your bar tab analogy. Like, hey, if I could put this on your bar tab, would that make things easier? And we're in this, you know, common question I get is, well, I would assume this is all like very infrastructure-y focused stuff. And it's actually not the case. We're seeing all the hyperscalers move more towards business applications and vertical solutions. So, you know, we're seeing CRM providers launch in marketplace. You know, Zoom launched in marketplace last year. We've FP&A software like Anaplan, who recently got acquired, they're in marketplace. Seek, who's a vertical IoT solution for Shopify manufacturing, they've had a lot of success in marketplace. So we're seeing the aperture around this being a mechanism to better optimize your cloud budget and your third-party software spend, change the nature of the kind of software that's purchased. But everyone at Tackle's here to help, including myself. And I'd say anyone who has questions about, you know, thinking about marketplace strategically or even how to get started fast, we're always here to be of service.
Yeah, good stuff. John, thank you so much. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, this is a space that I don't want to say we took for granted, but we just, you know, we knew it was there. It wasn't something that we had to dive into, but the more and more we're watching, you know, companies change their business model, how they interact with the cloud, how they interact with customers, it's been great to sort of be able to dive into it and dig into it and, you know, tap into your expertise. So we really appreciate the time today. Thank you so much on behalf of Aaron and I. Folks, with that, I'm going to wrap it up. We want to thank John. I want to thank all of you for, you know, continuing to listen, tending to, you know, tell a friend, help us grow the show, help us grow the community. And with that, I'm going to wrap it up and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.